Hello, fellow watch lovers, nerds, enthusiasts, or however you identify. You're listening to 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast with your hosts, Andrew, and my good friend Everett. Here, we talk about watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like. Everett, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm always concerned for your well-being and general...
I'm good. We have
status.
We've had a couple days of like heavenly reminders that it's
early spring.
It's still early spring. So had some like wind and some moisture and just like general like more unpleasant than it really should be.
Like it's a big like thunderstorm in the last week.
Yeah. So, which is fine. This happens every year, right? You don't know exactly when it's going to happen, but it happens every year. You know, baseball is kind of in full swing right now, which makes baseball a little
you did there.
Tough. Full swing.
Yeah, because you swing baseball.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep,
unintentional.
Yeah, right.
And so that's been a little like moving games around and like... You know, it's really difficult. I've always like complained when things get canceled later than they should get canceled. Where I'm like, this should get canceled. But being in the position of like, I'm in a small group that has to make those decisions. Sometimes it's like, let's hold off. We should really hold off because rescheduling the things is a giant. It's like, maybe we can. Like, let's wait, maybe. Like, we would hate to cancel it. Have to go through the work of rescheduling and then look outside and have it be beautiful. Like yesterday we were talking like, do we need to cancel? And we waited and we had time. We played the game. We got the game in, didn't have to reschedule it, you know, went well. So anyway, that's that.
That's always the challenge of early season baseball. And makeup games are the worst because it's like, if you can get it rescheduled, it's like, okay, well, we have a makeup game tomorrow. So say goodbye to your Thursday afternoon.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. But anyway, yeah, doing really well. Enjoying my life. Mariners swept Houston, which golly, I love it when that happens. How are you, Andrew?
I'm good. I'm still a little cold. I just spent the last 2.5 hours outside. And this field that we practice at is right at the base of a hill. And because it's an athletic complex.
Do you guys practice at Kids Sports?
ATA.
Oh, yeah.
Which is windier than Kids Sports. Kids Sports at least has the protection of the building and the stands. So if you get a north-south wind, you're screwed.
Right.
And we often have a north-south. But here, we play at ATA, so there's like a, you know, three sides unprotected right at the base of a hill. So we get just whipped with wind. Right. Even in the beating sun, it is still kind of a cold field.
Yeah.
So I spent 2.5 hours in that, and it wasn't like it rained a little bit, but it was just
unpleasant.
It was just unpleasant.
Yeah, 'tis the season, and when it gets and when you get cold, you kind of stay cold.
Yeah, yeah, because I did not have time to like take that warm up shower when I got home. I had to go right into like, you need to eat dinner and you need to do homework and here's all this shit that you need to put away that you just for some reason aren't putting away and yeah, and just like that rigmarole. And now here we are. So I still haven't done my warm-up shower, so I'm still like just chilled.
Totes.
But you know,
my goats.
Again, such is life. Such is life.
Well, in any event, we're not here to talk about kids' sports or weather. We're here to talk about watches. And this is
Watches and Wonders.
This is a big week for watches. You know. I assume, you know, we didn't discuss this, but we did the thing we always did, which is we each picked a handful of our favorite releases. With that said, I mean, I think in the last 3 days, there have been
10,000
watches released, you know, and a lot of really cool shit. So, I think...
But it's Watches and Wonders, so a lot of it's in the realm of unobtainium.
Some of the stuff, yeah, that's right. Some of the stuff that we have on our list is low-hanging fruit, fine. Some of the stuff is like just, you know, I could tell Andrew liked it, that watch, so we put it on his list, and vice versa. So You're going to get kind of like, I don't want to commit to this being my favorite Watches from Watches and Wonders because I think time will tell. It's a smattering
of things that piqued our interest.
Yeah, that's right. These are the watches that at the time I prepared for this show seemed the most talkaboutable. That's a phrase, talkaboutable.
I agree.
So, Andrew, do you want to get us started?
In our time honored tradition, I'm gonna kick us off, and I'm gonna start kind of with a follow up. Hang on. To our conversation last week, where we talked about, or was it? It had to have been 2 weeks ago. It doesn't matter when we talked about the watches that the Artemis crew members were wearing, and we talked about how all of the astronauts were wearing.
I think that was last week.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
God, the things that it's been a long couple weeks for me. We talked about how they were all wearing a Breitling, which was clearly product placement in some way, right? It wasn't like these totally disparate people all settled on a Navitimer, and it's not like all astronauts buy their own Breitling because that's what the cool kids wear, because they all have X-33s and moon watches. And I think the X-33 is like just the coolest fucking thing in the world.
That's really neat.
I really want one. But they're kind of hard to come by these days.
Are they?
Yeah, they're expensive. Mm. And there's like limited production of the current iteration. So I haven't looked into it a whole lot because it's not... It's a little bit more than I would want to spend on that watch. Like, there's other watches in that $5,000 category that I want $5,000 worth more than that watch. But sure. I'd like to be an astronaut and just have one handed to me. I think that would be cool.
It would be cool. I mean, it would also be cool to be an astronaut.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that's a double victory right there. So anyway, the Breitling. So Breitling has now that they're... Cosmonaut Artemis II has traversed the moon. Transversed, right? Because it went past and then came back.
You know, we stay away from politics on this show, Andrew.
You're right. We do. It has gone to a green screened sound and movie stage. They put them in a capsule for 10 days. Faked a bunch of imagery and returned. They are unveiling their new cosmonaut model that was unveiled on Artemis. And frankly, it's an Navitimer. It's a cosmonaut. It is just a special edition, and I freaking love it with Artemis imagery on the case back. So spec sheet on this, it's exactly what you'd expect. It's a 41 millimeter case. It's 13 thick steel case. It's a blue meteorite dial, 30 meters of water resistance, So on a blue alligator strap, it's the BO2 movement, COSC certified. We know what this watch is. But it's the special edition for the Artemis missions. As worn, not these particular ones that you'll buy, but as worn by the crew of the Artemis II, who has just recently returned from their mission to the dark side of the moon.
Yeah, I mean, not to challenge your assertions, because yeah, I think you're right. This is very much a Navitimer. It is a 24-hour Navitimer, which is notable, I think, in and of itself. So rather than being on a standard 12-hour, the hour hand goes around once per day. So I don't know who it was. I think one of the astronauts mentioned that they kept this on Met time and that was the watch they used for mission elapsed time. So
Reed Weissman. The mission commander.
There you go. So yeah, I mean it's a like you said, Andrew, it's a special edition Navitimer, but I think that in and of itself, that 24-hour time, and this is sort of the cosmonaut watch. You know, I think maybe to your point though, right? Like I do wish this was like a little like it just looks like an Avatimer.
Yeah, but you know what? I think I respect the game because the Moonwatch just looks like a Moonwatch. Right? There's nothing particularly special about it.
Sure.
But it continues to be. And I think that's maybe a move that they're trying to do here. Is it's just the watch, right? Yeah. We don't need to do anything special with it because it's already so special that astronauts wear it.
I don't really like that it's like blue meteorite and just like,
yeah, I can do without the meteorite.
It doesn't feel like an instrument to me.
Not with a meteorite dial, no.
It feels like a sexy watch. Like, I say that.
And it's on an alligator strap.
Notwithstanding the slide rule and everything. I wish it was a little bit more stoic.
Then get the Navitimer.
Womp womp.
I think it's a cool special edition. I'm also glad that there's not any more speculation on what the, like, now we know.
Yeah.
They were all gifted these and said, wear these to and fro the moon.
Tudor released a bunch of shit.
Boy, did they.
The 100th anniversary of Tudor, I understand. With that said, Tudor sort of made a point of saying, "Oh, we're not gonna have a big masturbatory 100-year celebration." Which I'm also kind of like, "Why not?
Yeah,
like why the fuck not?" Anyway, whatever. They did release a bunch of Watches and Wonders stuff this year, so we're not gonna talk about all of them. But I would like to talk just briefly about I think their most interesting release, which is the Monarch. So this is a watch that is sort of a homage to the earlier days of Tudor. With that said, it's a very, very modern watch. I said recently that Tudor should be weirder. Like, I want Tudor to be weirder. This is weird. And I don't dislike it, but it's maybe not the direction I was thinking when I said that. What do we have? We have a 39-millimeter sport watch. Very sporty. It's got a California dial, which always sort of feels a little dressy, but this is not a dress watch. Rather, it's a vintage cued sport watch that's kind of weird.
It is.
It's like BB58 size, which is to say it's like 12 thick and 39 millimeters wide. So kind of a big watch, not a big watch, but a beefy, sporty watch. And it's got weird angles. It is an oddly angled watch. Kind of a weird release from Tudor, Andrew.
Yes, it is all over the map. The angles read like 60s and 70s sport watch. The dial reads like 1920s, but with a California dial flare, small seconds. Like this is all over the map. And then the bracelet reads like 90s Tag Heuer with the interesting like pyramid like center links on the bracelet. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it does feel a little hodgepodgey.
This was designed by committee.
Maybe. Tudor has done some interesting stuff. So atypically, Tudor's given this a view through case back, which is,
I can't name any that aren't like LEs off the top of my head.
And you know, the typical sort of Tudor Kinesi stuff is usually pretty boring, but this has a very, very finely finished MT5662-2U caliber, which is a new caliber for Tudor, and it is really well decorated. it's a pretty Côte de Genève, and it's pretty. It's a lovely movement, and you can see it when you turn the watch over, which for Tudor is...
You don't have to pull a case back.
That's not something that happens very often. Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't dislike it.
Can I say...
We've got like black markers on this copper, brushed copper
dial.
They're
calling it champagne, and I don't accept champagne as the color description.
That's
this.
A very dark champagne.
Yeah, it's gone bad.
That's right.
This is apple cider.
That's right.
So even with the hodgepodge, I can kind of get with it. The one thing that my eyes locked onto and I could not overcome is the attached Roman numerals on the 11. I don't know why. I hate it. Hate it.
Interesting. It's not something I'd noticed. Now that I'm looking at it, I don't like it, but it's not something that had caught my eye.
I looked at this watch. I'm like, ooh, small seconds. I kind of dig the little bit of kind of conflict in the angles and the roundness.
Sure.
And then I got on that 11, and it reminds me of like Coach or Louis Vuitton or like a fashion brand kind of logo thing. And none of the other Roman numerals are attached, right? You know, I obviously understand the only other one could have been the two, but they didn't, if they had stacked the two and like done the horizontal lines to make it a connected two and then connected the 11, like,
sure. Like connect them, but give them proper kerning.
Yeah.
It's a decision. I don't hate it. I'm not like super high on it or anything, but it doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you.
The dude cannot abide that.
The other thing I note about this watch, this is the first in-house Tudor movement with a small seconds. So, mm-hmm. And small seconds and six are lovely. I like them in this. They've done a good job with this. I don't know, you know,
from the 2 and 10 down, I really like this dial.
Yeah.
It's got this really, really lovely vertical brushing in that apple cider, not champagne color. The black on the markers like just pops in a way.
Sort of like a matte black.
Yeah, pops in a way that it's striking. But man, that 11 o'clock marker.
Woo! Marked at 6 o'clock above the small seconds, it says master chronometer. And that does seem to be where Tudor's going these days, right? Their Tudor is emphasizing, as of late, timekeeping. Precise timekeeping, which is nice, right? They've shifted to like really heavy emphasis on in-house production, and it seems like they're doing that right, which is to say we're going to do it in-house, meaning we're in control and we're going to take control and be accurate. And I like that.
I really like that. And I think that's an interesting place for Tudor to explore and maybe corner the market on and maybe step out of the Rolex shadow in a little way or a little bit of a way and sort of define themselves as independent to Rolex. They're no longer the little brother. They are standing on their own master chronometer. And I think, unfortunately, that'll mean Tudor will push a little bit further up market because the Monarch is coming in at, what, six grand?
Yeah, 5875. Yeah.
And keep my money and do away with that 11 o'clock marker.
Andrew, what's next?
Braymont.
Never heard of them.
A lot of people haven't. A lot of people have heard of them in various iterations. They are, or have, released the Supernova chronograph in partnership with Astrolab.
I don't know why.
I do too.
I didn't read this book, but I thought you were going somewhere with that.
Yeah.
Me too.
I had to be really, really intentional about saying what I was reading and not what I was wanting to see. You know, the eyes see what they want and the ears hear what they want. So Astrolab, probably the last time I'm going to say that partnership, corporation are sending a watch permanently to the moon. So there is a mission coming. Oh, shoot. I should have looked. Scheduled to land.
Wait, the fuck did you just say? They're going to like just like so, shoot a watch to the moon and leave it there?
May I please explain it?
All right, keep going.
There is a moon mission coming up later this year.
Never heard of
it. To land a Astrolabs Flip Rover, which is the Flex Lunar Innovation Platform, as part of Astro Robotics Griffin Mission 1. So
they're greasing the skids.
Yes. You're going to make me say it on accident. Now my train of thought's gone. A supernova is going to be included as a part of this payload package and will be a permanent addition in what will be scientific instruments and rover instruments heading to the south pole of the moon as...
Which pole?
Going to the back door, ladies and gentlemen. As reconnoitering instruments for things on the lunar surface, which is where NASA intends or believes they intend to start landing equipment and apparatus.
I feel for a
permanent.
I feel like you're really fucking this up, and it's all my fault.
For a permanent installment on the lunar surface. That concludes my interest in this watch.
Tell me, what's the watch?
The watch is a Bicompax. It's a 41 millimeter case, 14.4 thick. It's a 914L stainless steel, and I'm interested why they chose 914, not 916. We really need a metallurgist to talk, or like maybe a designer to talk about that. Bicompax chronograph. It's a base SW500 movement, integrated bracelet. It has a 3D black galvanic grid pattern with perforations. The watch itself is not something I would have ever taken a second look at were it not for being part of a payload as a permanent installment on the lunar surface. Because it's just a really, really busy, textury dial that doesn't do it for me. With a black angled, how many sides is that? Octet, no, hexagonal.
Bezel. I don't know, man. I hate it. I hate it.
Yeah, like I said, I really don't care for the watch at all. It's a miss for me, and it in my head fits pretty squarely in the
yeah. What is 914L steel?
There's
316. There's 904. What is 914?
We've seen 914 a couple times, and I don't recall right off the top of my head where, but this fits squarely in the Braymont tween years that we're seeing from Braymont, where they're really still trying to figure out what their design language and philosophy are. And this is, I don't know, this is maybe Braymont in their emo phase. They're listening to Green Day on repeat.
I don't
get the watch. And I think that's kind of Braymont isn't designing watches for me. I know that. I think Braymont knows that.
I don't think Braymont knows what the fuck they're doing right now.
They're in their emo phase. But I think it's really cool that they have partnered with Astrolab to make a moon capable watch, which does really strongly align with the Braymont heritage of making instruments for the hardest conditions imaginable. I like that. I think the design is a miss for me, but the idea of we're going to design something that's going to go do something that really should be impossible, and we're going to go do it. I think that's really cool. I think this partnership is really cool, and I'm excited to see more I'm excited to see more watches intended for space travel. Mm-hmm. You know, I think of Michael Happe. We talked to him, what, 5 years ago?
It's been a while. Yeah, it's been a minute.
Maybe even longer than that, talking about being in the works for a Mars watch. Like the watch that he wanted to design to be intended for a trip to and stay on Mars. I love that kind of ambition. I think it's really neat. I think it's neat to see this weird little world of watches, because objectively a G-Shock is just, it is the moon watch, right? It's the best tool for the job. But there's still watch companies efforting, doing cool shit.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that we didn't get any sort of G-Shock, or really any sort of G-Shock. I mean, were there any G-Shocks on Artemis? I don't think so. What we saw is
there were not.
Is through sort of the oddies and the late part of the 90s that really Casio was the soup du jour for real astronauts, for working astronauts. And so with Artemis, it feels like we've gone back to a sort of like
the 60s.
Maybe not the 60s. That's not what I'm trying to say here. This has become something a little different than it was, right? Rather than being pragmatic, and it feels to me like this last generation, this last trip has really emphasized the sexy marketing aspects of the journey, which I don't know if I'm totally pumped about that. It would be nice. I love that Omega X33s are out there. It would be really nice for me to see these astronauts like saying, I wear this because this is the best tool. And of course we had Reed Weissman saying, oh, well, I loved the Breitling's 24-hour dial. With that said, is that the best tool? Probably not, right? A Breitling Navitimer is hard to read.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
but it looks so good.
I want to talk about Manta. Manta released this last fall the newest version of the Triumph. And you know what, Andrew? I will say my initial thoughts on the new Triumph were, I think I feel a little bit of reticence about the new Triumph because I love the old version of the Triumph so much. It is not an exaggeration, even slightly an exaggeration, to say it is, for me, a platonic ideal of watches, right? The size, the design is, I don't want to say perfect because no such thing exists, but it's really fucking close.
Yeah.
And so when they released the new Triumph, it felt to me like Mike and Justin kind of were getting away a little bit from the things I love about the Triumph, right? The size, that sub 10 millimeter case height, and that 38.5 millimeter case just sings. And it felt to me like the new Triumph, with almost an additional millimeter of case thickness and a slightly wider 40, we of course, our show was called 40 and 20 because at the time we created this, we really felt like 40 millimeters and 20 millimeter lug opening is the platonic ideal for watches.
It's Goldilocks.
At some point in my watch journey, I decided for me, a slightly smaller case is perfect. And the Manta Triumph, Andrew, I'll just say, is part of that, right? Mm-hmm. It is part of what brought me down from that 40 millimeter.
Well, and bear in mind too, in 2018, when we started this,
watches were big.
Watches were 42 to 45 yes. millimeters.
Yes, like, that's right.
Like there weren't 38, 36 non-vintage offerings out there.
That's right. So when Manta released this new version of the Triumph, which was almost a full millimeter thicker, slightly bigger, and then they did the other thing they did, and this is related to the slightly thicker. They increased the water resistance from 150 meters to 200. Hey, look, Justin, we've talked about that. That's still just 11 points.
Yeah.
You don't get more points for that. Okay. We talked about it.
If you increase it from 100 to 110, now we're talking.
So with that in mind, I think I was just a touch. I don't want to say disappointed by it, but I thought, oh man, you know, you're kind of getting a little bit away from what I really want to watch.
You're fucking with the thing that I love.
That's true. With that said, it's grown on me a little bit. I'm not upgrading. I still prefer my OG Triumph because I know the dimensions are perfect. With that said, the new Triumph, that watch I think is really sexy. And I think they are following market trends, which is towards a slightly bigger watch. And there's nothing wrong with 40. And I'll tell you, that watch is sexy AF.
It's felt too. Even yeah, being a little thicker, right. Even being a little bit wider, that is still a very, very svelte sport watch.
So if you've been paying attention to Monta over the last few years, you will have noted that the Noble is another watch that is sold by Monta. And if you're really paying attention, you'll know that the Noble is essentially a Triumph with a slightly dressier dial, with a much dressier dial, simpler, more refined. A Noble is a Triumph. So it will not at all surprise you to hear that this week Monta released the Noble in a slightly bigger size. 40 millimeters, 10.5 thick, 200 meters of water resistance. They released the Noble in the new Triumph case. I don't think it's objectionable for me to say that, which makes sense. They did something that I'm happy about, though, Andrew. Releasing this new 40 millimeter Noble, they have announced that they are not getting rid of the 38.5 millimeter Noble. It is,
yes,
they're still making it and they're selling them side by side. So
that's exactly the right choice, right?
It is perfect.
My initial concern when I saw this release, I was like, oh, the Noble was good because it was 38.5. It was a refined Triumph. It was for people who wanted just a slightly more dress sport than sport watch. Because the Triumph is exceptionally sporty,
yes,
and not even a little bit dressy. The Noble bridged that gap to take you to just a dress sport watch.
Yes.
And at 38.5, the size was really good. I'm interested to see how, if this is going to be Monta's kind of expansion, if they're going to start doing size iterations across their entire line.
I will tell you, there's someone who I'm close to, who I talk to frequently, who would know about these kinds of things, who have suggested to me that the Triumph will almost certainly be available in the future in a 36.5, I think was the cited dimension. So you know,
I'd like to see an Ocean King at 38 and 42.
I think you're right. I think that Monta's going to have a little bit more size variety. Look, here's the deal: we can talk about this stuff. We can criticize decisions. We can say, you know, I wish they did this, or I liked it when they did that. I wish they would do this. But the end of the day, I believe this firmly, Monta is doing more. So by the way, I'm going to stop that thought. I'm going to interrupt that thought. This is coming in. I think 1585 is the
1585 for the first 100. And then it's going to the normal Monta price of
1850.
Yeah. 1895.
1895. Yeah. So, at sub $2,000.
Yes.
Monta crushes it. There is nobody in the business making a watch as good as Monta under $2,000. The finishing, the fit and finishing on these watches is absolutely superlative. And I don't say that lightly. I mean, we've touched, Andrew, you and I have touched a lot of watches.
And we both have put our money where our mouth is on that Monta dollar sign.
That's true.
Right? With no friends and family discounts here.
That's right.
Like we're paying retail. Pay full retail. That's, you know, we both have done it.
Yeah, that's right. And it's one of the few, you know, Formex is a watch that I paid for. I didn't pay quite retail. We don't actually know how much I paid for that watch.
Yeah, nobody does. Just an envelope of uncounted cash.
But I did buy a Formex. And I feel the same way about Formex. You know, Formex is obviously doing something slightly different than Monta. But, you know, Notice, I feel like, is in a slightly different category. But money where your mouth is, right? Mm-hmm. I bought that watch. So, you know, there are a few brands that I'm like, they're crushing it and they do what they do and they do it really, really well. But if you think about, like, no slight to any other company, but like, for instance, Jack Mason and Monta coming in pretty close price wise. Mm-hmm. If you ask me to pick one based on fit and finish, it's not close, you guys. And I love Jack Mason. I love what Jack Mason is putting out.
Yeah, the resurrected, not resurrected, the second coming.
Yeah,
Jack Mason. Yeah, I guess it is resurrected. But the second coming, like Jack Mason V2.
Crushing it.
Nailing it. Just knocking it out of the park.
But side by side with Amanta, the fit and fit, it's just not close.
It's not close.
Right?
I mean, we've...
That's not fair to Jack Mason. It's close, but Monta wins handily.
Yeah, there's not there isn't another brand in the affordable space that you're not going to get to the same level of fit and finish until you hit about that $5,000 mark.
Yeah, maybe $3,500. But with that said, I will say Jack Mason's making more interesting watches today.
Yeah.
The watches Jack Mason's releasing today, more interesting than anything Monta's released in 5 years.
Well, because Monta really hasn't had a release since the Noble.
Yeah, well, they have, but I think that they're playing very conservative, which is kind of their game, right? Well, conservative. Mean,
they've iterated on the Ocean King and the, what's the other one? It's the SkyQuest?
SkyQuest, yep.
They've iterated on both of those. They've iterated on the Triumph.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have a new SKU from Monta since the Noble, or like a new catalog item.
Yeah.
But Monta puts a bucket load of money into their manufacturing process.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at the Ocean King, like that's it's a new model, right? It's not just an iterative
tip
release.
To tail, a new model, but it's still on the Ocean King line.
Now, right? I will say, I do want to say one more thing about this release, because if you're familiar with the Noble, there's something Monta's done more than just make a bigger size of this watch. There is a dimensional, like sort of a, it's still got the 20 millimeter lug opening, and I think it's the same bracelet. And so what they've done, and this is also true with the Triumph, the flanks are sort of beefed up a little bit and the lugs are beefed up. It actually has a different feel to it. It is a sportier, it is a sportier watch for sure. And I like that. I think it looks really, really good.
It's got more like shoulder in the lugs.
Well, and it has crown guards too. That's another ad.
But the shoulder of the lug.
Yeah.
A little bit like he's been hitting the gym.
That's right. A little bit. I mean, they've done it. They've followed in the footsteps of Rolex a little bit in that regard, which I don't think.
I'd like to see them drop a chronograph.
It'd be cool. I think they could pull it off.
I think they would do it.
What's that new chronograph caliber? Yeah, I mean.
They could do a really baller.
Yeah. Yeah, that peacock
chronograph.
Yeah. What's next, Andrew?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't.
Although they're all Swiss, so I don't think that's going to happen.
Swiss.
Man, we haven't talked about anything yet. We're 40 minutes in. We've had a lot to say about what we talked about.
I know you hate how I say this brand name, so I'm going to go with a couple variations right off the front. Bulgari, and Bulgari.
I think those all work for me.
Okay. So, Octo Finissimo.
Although I think it's pronounced Bulgari.
I think it's Bulgari.
Bulgari.
Because it's a V in it. And I know what sound a V makes. It's not ooh or it's
just move it along.
Bulgari Octo Finissimo minute repeater, 37 millimeters. And here's why I want to talk about it. Just briefly, because it's too much for me. The thickness on this thing. Why can't I find it?
Here
it is.
Yeah, super thin.
3.12 millimeters in a minute repeater.
Isn't that the movement thickness?
That's the movement thickness. Yeah.
So
the
I think the watch dimension is like 8.
Where is it? I had it.
This is on my list too, Andrew, if you want me to talk about this.
Just
because it feels like maybe you're not ready.
I'm never ready. I've never once been ready. But here's what I want to talk about it. Because I love the Octofinissimo. I think it is one of the coolest expressions of design and technology in that we have in the watch world. And I, seeing this come in as a minute repeater, sub 10 millimeters, we'll say, with 30 meters of water resistance, I now find it inexcusable for watches to be greater than 10 millimeters.
Yeah,
that concludes my rant. This is a minute repeater with, fairness, only 30 meters of water resistance, but it's a minute repeater with a sub 4 millimeter movement. So, like, maybe let's get our act together and start thinning movements and cases. This is also $200,000, and there's only 20 of them.
Yeah. So I don't have the minute repeater on my list, but what I do have is the new Octofinissimo released in 37. So the first time I saw an Octofinissimo was on Rick of Solabs on his wrist. He had an Octofinissimo, and I was like, whoa, I've never seen one of those. That's wild. And he's like, yeah, it's a really fucking cool watch. And let me wear it. Let me play with it. You know, my reaction to it was, holy cow, this thing's super thin. And, oh gosh, this is way bigger than I thought it was going to be. It is a big sort of cuff of a watch.
Because it's just a credit card.
That's right. Yeah, it's got a cuff feeling to it, which I wasn't wild about. And I thought, you know, this watch is just too big. So Bulgari has shrunk,
yeah, that's the one.
The Octofinissimo down to 37 millimeter, which is, I think, a little over 2 millimeters. The standard is 40, but it's not 40. I think it's like
39
change. Yeah. And so like almost 3 millimeters of reduction in size on paper.
Which for a square is meaningful.
It's a big square watch. That's right. And so I think that that's going to make this watch.
Now, because the lug to lug on these is really long. These are like 42 lug to lug, even for the 37.
Interestingly enough, the 37s are slightly thicker because that movement that Bulgari has in the 40 millimeter is like, I think the movement is like 37 millimeters wide.
Well, it's pancaked. Yeah, they gotta.
And so when they shrunk that down to fit in this case, you know, taking off 3 millimeters on the X and Y dimensions, they had to add a little bit to the Z. So slightly thicker and not much, right? Like 0.2 millimeters. So I think that this watch comes in just a touch thicker than the old Octofinissimos. Probably in practice, you're not gonna feel the thickness. What you are gonna feel is that overall expanse being shrunk down to a more manageable size. I'm guessing here, of course. I haven't touched these. I just think they take a very interesting watch and make it a potentially wearable watch.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think this is great. No, this is not an inexpensive watch. $16,600 for a base model in steel. And then if you want precious metal, you're obviously looking at much more than that, $50,000 roughly. With that said, secondary market, let's say you get into these at about 10. It's a suit. Like, this is one of those watches that you could wear and people are going to be like, I don't know anything about watches.
And that's cool.
And that's interesting, right? Yeah. This is a really cool watch. And it's not just cool for watch people. This is just cool. It's a sexy watch. It's different than anything you're going to see. It's going to, if what you want to do is grab people's attention, it's going to do that. This is a really neat watch. And I think this is a much, much needed update to a watch that was, I think, practically speaking, unwearable. I don't think that this is a watch that, not unwearable is not fair, but it's not a watch that I would want to wear very often.
It wasn't. It's certainly not my jam either. But for the mind-blowing technology that's going into it,
yeah, yeah. I mean, of course, this isn't. You know, Bulgari's got some really, you know, crazy shit. They've got paper thin tourbillons, and this isn't that. This is more sort of like their, you know, sort
this is
of
their entry level shit. Stuff. Yeah, and it's still like some of the coolest stuff in the watch world.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a really great update. Does that count as my watch, or should I pick something else?
I think you're up now because I wanted to talk about the minute repeater.
Tudor updated the Black Bay 58 quietly. And when I say quietly, I mean
added blue.
No. So the Black Bay. Okay. So the Black Bay 54 was released in blue, and it is just a Black Bay 54. But last year, Omega released a Black Bay 58 in maroon, burgundy. I can't remember what they called it. And in that 58, they took some elements from the 54 and released it. And I think a lot of people were like, oh, this is really cool. This feels more like a classic vintage Omega, or not Omega, Tudor. And so what Tudor has now done is kind of repeated those things to fully refresh the Black Bay 58. Now, you would be forgiven in looking at these watches and wondering what's new. I've got a list, a small list of things. So they've taken the... they've taken the lollipop seconds hand mm-hmm. from the 54, which I love. They've taken the sort of hipped minute hand, mm-hmm. which I don't care about. They have made the finishing or the space between the coin edge, the fluting on the bezel and the crown, both a little wider. Probably going to give you a little bit more grip, make it a more functional watch, but also gives it a little bit more, I think, vintage appeal. And they've taken off just a touch of thickness from 11.9 down to 11.7, which I don't think you're going to notice. But maybe.
I think
still 200 meters. It's still a Tudor Black Bay, but they've just
refined it a little bit.
A little bit.
And to
which I don't mind at all.
To such a small degree that you'd be forgiven for not noticing.
Yeah, I don't mind it at all. I like what they've done here. Now, I've been negative about the Black Bay 58. I think this is a good release. I haven't been negative, but I've not been super high on the 58. And I'm still not.
Yeah, well.
But this is a good release.
It didn't ever really, like, get you.
It still hasn't.
Yeah, it didn't. It hasn't. Hath we, not.
We do now, of course, as I mentioned earlier, have master chronometer certification here because mm-hmm. Tudor's leaning into it. With that, we do have a price increase. Yes. Pricing for the Tudor Black Bay 58 is $5,000 on rubber, $5,225 on an Oyster, and $5,350 on the Jubilee, which is about a $600 increase across the board for MSRP yeah. Tudor Black Bay 58s, which makes sense, right?
Yeah, I've always really liked the 58. But in this zone, I think there's other more interesting things.
Me too, yeah.
And it's not a short list, or not a particularly short list of more interesting things at that $5,000-ish mark yeah. that do the same things. And I know there's a lot of, I mean, shoot, I know people who own a BB58 and I would never judge that choice because I think it's a fantastic watch. Totally. And you're not going to do better for this price point. You just might find something more interesting.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's apples and oranges, but like, for my money, give me a Zen T50, right?
Or even a Seamaster Pro, or
yeah,
I think that's where I go.
Did you say a Seamaster Pro?
Yeah,
get the fuck out of here.
What should I have said?
I don't know. A Seamaster? Who's buying a Seamaster? You mean like a coaxial? Like
fuck yeah,
gross.
That's
gross.
And even at this price point, I mean, a Pelagos isn't much. I mean, a Pelagos I think is $1,000 less.
Yeah, and obviously, again, like with the T50, apples and oranges, right? The Black Bay 58 is doing that dress diver thing that I think they really are doing that.
Doing that sub thing.
Better than, well.
But a T-50 would also be dope.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew, anything else you want to talk about today?
Are we long in the tooth?
We're not. We could keep going for a while. Let's go.
That's our show.
Keep it going.
We do run this thing.
That's true.
Because we haven't gotten to much. Oh. I sent you a bunch of stuff that like I liked, and now as I'm looking at it for...
You're like, I don't care about that.
Like, I've lost interest. I didn't lose interest in this, the Oris Star Edition.
Yeah.
This is maybe going to turn me to Oris. So what we have here is a watch that arguably is Oris, right? And it's being re-released. So this new era, they're calling it, of Oris began in 1966, and it was launched by the Oris Star, the first lever escapement. And now here it is, first lever escapement from Oris. Mm-hmm. And now here it is back. And this is a beautiful modernization of that watch, I think. Right?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, this, it is sized perfectly. It's a 35 millimeter case, 41 and a half lug to lug, 11-1 thick, 50 meters of water resistance, and it's got this lovely, like, kind of chamfered tonneau case.
Yes, C case. It's like a, like with a great ribbon chamfer.
Yeah, this thing is absolutely lovely. And this is, it's not master chronometer, nor is it a chronometer. 1800 Swiss francs. This is unlike anything I've seen from Oris.
Yeah.
In modern memory, right? Oris has, you know, their lineup of like 10 watches that you recognize ish 10,
yeah,
maybe less, doesn't matter, but watches you recognize as Oris, and this wholly is not, and I love it.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting. So back to the lever action thing for just a second, Andrew. You and I are both too young to have any like real world context for this, but apparently there was a rule in Switzerland, there was a law in Switzerland that prevented companies from using tech for the first, basically like tech might exist, other companies might be using it, but you Swiss company can't. I'm sure that this was sort of part of Switzerland's, you know, regime hand-holding thing that they had, and the fellow who invested the most time and resources to fight this was an Oris attorney, and eventually in 1966 got that law overturned, and this with the Oris Star was the watch that they released to celebrate. Now we can use the lever escapement, because the lever escapement is, I don't know what percentage it is, but I think a lever escapement is in the vast, I mean,
it's got to be, it's objectively all.
Objectively, it's subject, yeah, yeah.
All watches.
All watches use a lever escapement, right? So we have in the 60s, all these Swiss companies that are stuck using old.
From the 30s through. So this law was introduced in 1934. So until 1966.
Crippling rule.
All of these companies who hadn't yet developed. And so the law was that brands weren't allowed to introduce new technology. They had to work with to their brand. So they had to use the technology that they were already working with. There was no R&D. So it was the brands that were ahead, stayed ahead, And it was a limiter for the research and development and advancement of watchmaking in Switzerland until this law was overturned.
Meanwhile, by 1960, basically everyone besides these limited companies is using a lever escapement.
Yeah.
No, it is a cool watch. I think that the size is right for the watch it is. I also think that it would be smaller than I would want to wear at 35 millimeters. It's a little watch.
Yeah, but I think of like 36 millimeter watches are just, they feel so good.
They can feel good, yeah.
And I think with this tonneau E case, I think that's going to be a really good feeling watch.
Yeah.
And I love that it's from a brand that, you know, like I've talked about a lot of Oris watches. I don't really have anything against any Oris watches. They just have never really scratched any itches for me.
Yeah.
This one gets the one right behind the ear.
I think it's lovely. I think it's lovely. So JLC.
Oh yeah.
JLC. Oftentimes I think JLC gets short shrifted, in the world of like badass production watches, right? They're sort of like, they're kind of on an island, right?
They live in a weird space.
They're in between Lange and, you know, basically right there with the big boys, but just a little less. And so anyway,
just a little on the outside.
I've been sort of quietly, I would say, like admiring a few JLC watches from afar, but I feel like by and large, there's always something about JLC that is just like, I'm maybe not going to get there with you, Jaeger. That's what I call him. We're friends.
Jaeger LeCoultre.
Yeah, I call him Jaeger, though.
Jagger.
Well, Jaeger LeCoultre released 3 versions of its master control chronometer with integrated bracelet sport watches, and I am here for it. So what they've done is they've released a time date, they've released a power reserve, and then of course they've released a lovely blanking on words.
I had it too. I was going to make fun of you by saying it's a perpetual calendar.
Yeah. Jeez Louise. And listen, these are hot fire.
Yeah.
In my mind, these are basically perfect releases. The finishing on these, the bracelet to end link or to mid case connection, the way the case curves down into the lugs, the dials, the depth of the dial, the bezels, the crowns.
The depth of the case is also really fantastic. The so much of the watch is below the center line of the mid case. It's going to be so perfectly balanced, so thin. The curvature of that, of those lugs, is just gonna like make this thing become a part of you.
Yes. Yeah. Look, I'm not, it doesn't happen very often that I see a watch above, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 that I'm like, take my money. But this is one of those. So again, 3 versions, perpetual calendar, power reserve, and then time and date only. And I like all of them. I like all of these. So we've got COSC certifications across the board, but also the Jaeger LeCoultre's own independent
high precision guarantee.
That's right, HPG. We've just got
the middle finger to the COSC Plus.
That's right. We've got like crazy good. So, like for the HPG testing standards, we've got atmospheric conditioning up to 1,000. So from sea level up to 1,004 meters. We've got multi-directional shocks from 25 G to 50 G. We've got multi-position testing and then temperature testing down to 18 degrees. So fluctuations from 18 Celsius to 35 Celsius. And dimensionally, we've got, I think, 9.2 and 8.4 millimeter each on a 39 millimeter or 38 millimeter case, 39 for the perpetual calendar and the power reserve and 38 for the date only. These all come in steel or rose gold.
Pink gold. I'm not a fan of the pink gold.
I'm a fan. Three row integrated bracelets. Jeez Louise.
I can go without the power reserve indicator, but the perpetual calendar with the moon phase is just stunning.
And they're affordable too. I mean, when I say affordable, I mean like I think 15 grand for like 14 grand for the steel date only version, which tons of money. But you were talking about one of the coolest watches released this year. You could pick it up for, you know, just half of your salary for most of us.
Yeah. You know, just take a second mortgage. Plenty of people are doing it
these days. I love this watch. I love all three versions of this. Integrated Sport JLC, give it to me.
Yeah, I'm for it. The three-hander is
don't knock the perpetual calendar, because holy
shit. Oh, the perpetual calendar. It's something else.
Holy shit.
And it sub 10 for all of those complications is just something else. The chamfer on the top of the connecting integrated link, just to create some clearance.
40,000 in steel for the perpetual calendar, by the way. 40,000 euro.
Eh. Just sell your car.
Pocket change.
You start walking.
If I sell my car, they'd be like, hey, you owe us money.
Yeah, but then you'd have some liquid to then get this watch.
I don't think so. They'd be like, hey, your car is not worth as much as you want it. Andrew, any other watches you want
to
talk about?
Don't sell it to a bank. Sell it to a person and insist on cash. No, I think I can forego on the rest of the list.
The only other thing I want to talk about is Universal Genève released its watches, and they are, as I think, I'm not going to say as we feared. I'll just say as I feared. They're very cool and way too expensive, and that makes me sad.
Yeah, the pull router at, what's it, 14 grand?
Yeah, starting at 14 grand.
Not exactly what I was... It's what we should have expected.
I know,
but not what we hoped.
I know we just said, oh, the JLC is affordable at 14 grand. But the, like, Universal Genève is not JLC. And I wanted it to be affordable. I wanted them to, but they're going to be more like JLC than Universal Genève. That's it. Yeah. That's what we know. Which is fine. It's fine. It's not bad. It just makes me a little sad. I was really looking forward to having another player in that, you know, 5 to 15 range, mm-hmm. that 5 to 10 range, let's say. And that's not what's going to happen.
No.
Sad. So sad. Andrew, do you have another thing that you'd like to talk about?
I do have another thing.
Other things? Go.
So my kids got me this game for my birthday, because I had a birthday a couple weeks ago.
I played this game.
Throw the Burrito.
I played this game.
This is... So for those of you unfamiliar, Throw the Burrito is a very silly game made by Exploding Kittens, who does a lot of really fast-paced, really easy to learn, just silly, fun games.
Yeah, they've got like a physical element in addition to a game strategy element.
Yes, but they're really fast-paced. And what I really like most about them is they don't really require literacy.
True.
Like the gameplay isn't slow, you know, read the card. It's for this game, it's a fast-paced matching card game where you're creating pairs or sets of cards. And then there's some cards that create action items. The action item in this game is you grab a little foam burrito in the middle of the table.
Yeah, it's like squishy, like that squishy foam.
Yeah, it's not exactly foam. It's like the new era Nerf foam kind of stuff. It's not like jelly, so it doesn't get sticky and gross on the floor, but it's not exactly foam. And then you throw the burrito at...
Squishy foam.
Yeah. But then you throw that burrito at other players in the game. And it is so much fun. Because it's really fast. The rules are, you read them once, you're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
And everyone gets it. My six-year-old got it. I'm like, hey, this is how you play.
He's like, yeah, on it.
Okay, I accept. And then he could play and participate. He wasn't super good at understanding that if you get the card to throw the burrito, you're actually not the one who gets to throw the burrito. Because he just wanted to throw the burrito. Yeah. But we overlooked that excitement of it. It's fast. It's chaotic. It is a 5-minute play. If you like, you have 5 minutes to sit down and play a game, and that's what you want to do with 5 minutes. Like if I have 5 minutes to do something, I don't have enough time to do it.
Yeah.
But if you can really sit down and play through this game in 5 to 7 minutes, everyone has fun.
And it's the type of game that will elicit joy in a way that,
yes,
like quick happiness and joy. Yeah.
Yes. So it's $20, like maybe less if it's on sale, but in the way of like games to add to your collection that are really low impact. It's a deck of cards, a couple little odds and ends, and two foam burritos that highly, highly recommend. Because everyone's going to have fun doing it. It's a game that's too fast to not enjoy.
Yeah, if you're not having fun, it's because you
don't like fun.
Suck a little bit.
Yeah, because you don't like fun.
Because you don't like fun. No, it's I love that kind of thing. I love that kind of thing when you get a game and you're like, this wasn't expensive, it's not difficult, didn't take a long time, and I just enjoyed the last hour of my life doing this thing.
Yes.
Andrew, I've got another thing.
Do me.
Now, some of you, I'm just going to say, some of you at home are going to be like, Everett, yes, what took you so long? So I'll just say, before I tell you what my other thing is, I've known about this thing for some time, but I have not had good luck locating it. Andrew, I'm going to hand you the tool, and I'm going to hand you the case, because you need to feel all of this. So I have been on a bit of a Harbor Freight kick recently, and you're going to get some Harbor Freight entries for me and other things coming up in the next, I don't know, 6 months, let's say. I don't know when I'm going to talk about everything, but what I have is the quote-unquote Harbor Freight icon meme tool, which is what it's come to be known at. But this is the 35-piece quarter-inch mini ratchet kit from the icon 35-piece mini ratchet kit from Harbor Freight. This, I think about 4 years ago, hit the scene and was just instantly grabbed onto by like the sort of EDC tool crowd. People were like, this is legit and cool and awesome and compact. It is from, what I'm going to say is, I had, when I first bought my house, Andrew, in 2007, my first house, 2007-ish, I spent a lot of time at Harbor Freight. And I spent time at Harbor Freight, not because Harbor Freight had good shit, but because Harbor Freight was affordable for me.
And you, when you first, when you buy a house, you need so many tools.
I just needed so much shit. That's right. And so I bought a lot of really crappy Pittsburgh tools. And over time, I think Harbor Freight has done a really good job of spreading the love between, like, still very, very affordable, kind of shitty stuff that you only going to need once, and affordable versions of very, what I'm going to say, dupes of very high-end stuff. So this is in Harbor Freight's Icon line, which is, I think their line, I'm not sure if they own the companies or if they're, there's obviously a close relationship. But Icon is a Harbor Freight brand that is targeted at mechanics, professional mechanics. And so this, the build quality is really good. I cannot believe how nice everything in this set is. First, it is about the size of a big Nokia cell phone when it's closed. It's,
or like any current Android phone,
fits in your pocket. It fits in my briefcase. It is a 1/4-inch ratchet. How big is that wrench, Andrew? 5 inches? It's a 5-inch ratchet.
No, that's 8 inches.
That's no. Got it. I'm tracking you. But because of the way this kit is built, it can be, hand me this thing. It can be, you can extend it to about a 10 inch to get more leverage. You can also, the way the socket receiver is it's pass through. And so the extension, if you line up the extension with this little white dot, you can turn it into a T handle to get leverage. You can just, there's a ton of different ways you can use this. The socket, the wrench, the actual ratchet is just incredibly well built. It feels great.
The feedback on it, it feels like it was designed by like the same people that do ergonomic industrial design for consumer packaged goods.
It feels like a Japanese tool is what it feels like to me. And I say that as a, you know, a Gen X millennial cusper who doesn't have bad feelings about Japanese tools. This thing,
but also as like a person who likes fountain pens and shit and like has a real understanding of and watches for that matter, has like, yes, a real understanding of micro craftsmanship. And that thing, every single component, right from the glide lock on the case to
glide lock. I hear what you're saying, but it just cracks me up that you said that.
To the, because that's what it is. It's a gliding, like self-locking, yep, mechanism. Right to the action on the ratchet, the manipulability, the manipulation of the what's the word I want to use for that? The tilt.
The tilt on the ratchet.
On the, yep, ratchet head. Like that is,
everything feels great. Nothing feels cheap. Everything is just... Now, you might say, well, Everett, why do you need this thing? What are you going to do with it? That's a great question, and I don't have good answers for you.
It replaces every half-built, partially empty, replaceable screwdriver set that you have with something that's totally self-contained. Yes. It's not just that plastic strip that has screwdriver heads in it that just vanishes.
Because it's all self-contained. As long as you keep it together. I love this thing. I bought it. So I've been looking for one of these for a while and have struggled to find one because they're always sold out. And I could have ordered this. I could have just ordered one.
Yeah, but you want to buy it off the shelf.
I wanted to buy one off the shelf. And I went into the store today and they had 3 on the shelf. And so I just picked it up. $39.99. I paid full price for it. I'm like, God damn, this thing is worth every single penny. If this said Wera or Weehaw on it, I would, and I spent $85, I'd feel good about that purchase. It is absolutely phenomenal. Now, I am not a hard user case, right? My use case is light EDC 1/4-inch drive use, right? Like I might use this for, you know, the occasional knife repair or, you know, cleaning or things that you need a screwdriver for, like Andrew said. With that said, I am so happy to have this incredibly cool, really, really rad thing. I bought it and I was just like, I'm glad I own this.
Even the texture on the box
feels great.
Yeah. It
feels great.
It's just lightly rubberized, but it's not tacky.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good pickup, man.
It's phenomenal.
I every time I go into Harbor Freight, these are sold out.
They're always sold out. Now, I will say, if you go to the website, they have, I think, a 35 piece and an 85 piece. The 85 piece does not have the pass through on the wrench.
The pass through is nice though, because
gives you that T handle.
Because if you don't, I don't know. I feel like that pass through T handle and variable length of your ratchet end is what makes the 35 piece so valuable, because small tools are kind of hard to find.
Yeah.
We all have like 6-inch to like 10-inch shaft.
Not me.
Screwdrivers.
Oh yeah.
Everyone has a bucket load of big tools, but precise tools, like those are never around, it feels like, for me.
And there's no precision driver set with this. And it's like got that full size quarter inch drive set. So I'm not sure if you could find precision. It does have, Torx bits down to T6, and it has smallish hex bits. So this is a smallish hex bits. Yeah. But the actual screwdriver bits are all pretty big.
It's a 1.5 on the hex bit.
There you go. So it's not going to replace your precision screwdriver set. But that's not really what it's meant to be. It's just meant to be a small, compact quarter-inch drive driver set. So I don't have any sockets to use with this, so I think I'm going to pick up some sockets to have around that kind of goes along with this. But it's pretty cool. This thing is fucking rad. I was like, man, so cool. What a cool purchase.
Doing away with the...
I love things too, right?
Doing away with the little plastic cases of driver bits,
yeah.
Tips... That's a game changer, because those always get lost.
Yeah.
Right. You leave it in the screwdriver gets set somewhere, and then the bit falls out, or your kids take it, or, you know, God knows what happens. And now you're out of bit, but you have 8 of those screwdrivers.
Yeah.
And now no number one Phillips heads.
Yeah. I will say that the 85 piece comes with like a regular screwdriver handle. That's compelling, but it doesn't have the pass through. You could see, like, if you really wanted to, you could get both of them and kind of make a perfect. But yeah, I just went with this, and I'm gonna stick with this.
You'll probably get the 85 piece
at some point, maybe. Yeah, yeah, it's more money
next time you go in.
I don't think I need it, but I don't need this even. But I'm really glad to have it. Andrew, anything else you want to add before we wrap it up for the night?
No, I'm out of things.
Hey, guys, once again, we're a day late and a dollar short, but that's how we do this. We do it basically for free. And thank you for joining us every week, as you guys always do. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 40 and 20, the Watch Clicker podcast. Do us a favor. Go to our website. You can also follow us on Instagram. Watchclicker.com is the website. At 40 and 20 underscore watch clicker, or at watch clicker on Instagram. That's our social media and website. You can check them out and just go to those places if you want. But really what we hope you do is we hope you go to patreon.com/40and20. Look, guys, this is expensive and we do it out of the goodness of our heart, but hosting fees and everything add up. And patreon.com is how we have supported the show historically and how we support it today. If you want to go and drop a buck, $5, any amount of money, we would just appreciate the heck out of it. And don't forget to tune back in next Tuesday for another hour of watches, food, drinks, life, and other things we like.
Bye-bye.